Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and hello. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Dan Vo, and as you know by now, I am The Fool because, well, I was taught a lesson as a child, and it was a very important message that I was taught, and it was, a fool who knows that he is a fool is further down the road to wisdom than a wise man. Now, this enlightened philosophical lesson was taught to me, of course, by Monkey Magic. More on that later. Thanks to Bo for a wonderful gaze of our lives. And remember, after the show, we bent notes, so please do stick around for that. Now, today's show, it's going to be about a stone egg, 5 percussive eggs, and general operatic excellence. Today, we talk with David Young about his song cycle, Thousands of Bundled Straw, which will be performed in the new Salon in the Melbourne Recital Centre this week, and in anticipation of Cynthia Seddon's performance of The Queen of the Night again at the MRC, I'll take the aria out for a bit of spin and pair it up with a remixed and remade version, which is so bad, I expect a protest group of opera purists to call a rally outside and attempt to batter down the studio doors to prevent me from playing it. So as you can imagine, it will give me great satisfaction to play it. The program works best with your participation, and seeing us today is about operatic bizarreness. Why not tell me about your strangest opera experience? SMS 0427 joy949 or email onair@joy.org.au, or you can give us a call, 9699 2949. To kick off the show, I thought I'd explain for you exactly why you should beware of monkeys bearing weapons, be it a magical staff or the knife. Actually, you know what? I will just play you the opening and you should be able to get it. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
In the worlds before monkey, primal chaos reigned. Heaven sought order, but the phoenix can fly only when its feathers are grown. The four worlds formed again and yet again, as endless eons wheeled and passed. Time and the pure essences of heaven, the moisture of the earth, the powers of the sun and the moon, all worked upon a certain rock old as creation, and it became magically fertile. That first egg was named Thought. Tathagata Buddha, the Father Buddha, said, "With our thoughts, we make the world." Elemental forces caused the egg to hatch. From it then came a stone monkey. The nature of monkey was irrepressible.
Bones of an egg on a mountain top. Monkeyest monkey that ever walked. He knew every magic trick under the sun. He's the gods and everyone and have some fun. Monkey magic, 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 monkey magic.
Yes, it's Monkey Magic on Joy 94.9. It's Dan Vo here with you on The Fool and the Opera, and some say I resemble Monkey Magic. I say to them they should get their eyes checked. Now, Monkey Magic is something that I quite liked watching as a kid, and a pleasant surprise for me this week was finding out that there is a Monkey Magic the Opera. Monkey Journey to the West is a retelling of the 400-year-old story of the honourable, hilarious and often obnoxious Monkey King hatched from a stone egg who has to travel from India to China with the monk Tripitaka, Pigsy and Sandy, bringing along with them, of course, the holy scriptures because at one point or another, Monkey pissed off Buddha, so that's his punishment. Now, put together by the two lads behind the gorillas, the music, the set, the animations and the costumes for Monkey Magic the Opera is just completely amazing. It's got that stylistic look and feel that echoes the sort of thing that you see with the Gorillaz, and it's just amazing to see. And while it is a bit old news, seeing as the opera did open in Manchester in 2007, this week I did get some very exciting new news that leads to one of two conclusions. A, opera is becoming very trendy again, or B, monkeys are becoming very trendy again, or perhaps both. Swedish music duo The Knife have been invited by Danish hotel Proforma to write the music and libretto for Tomorrow in a Year, an opera about Charles Darwin, the man who taught us that men are evolved from monkeys. So that's two excellent examples of that prove that opera is cool. And the exciting thing is now we're going to add The Knife and The Gorillaz to our playlist. So this week, let's play a track from Monkey Magic. This is Monkey Bee. It's a bit of a slow starter, but when the bass kicks in towards the end, it's just amazing. So you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. This is Dan Vo on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and we just heard Monkey Bee from Monkey, The Journey to the West, from the opera of Monkey Magic. Thanks very much to Harriet as well, who's out there in the foyer just dancing for us, giving us a bit of her interpretation of the music in dance. So it's lovely to see. Now, of course, Monkey Magic, the opera, as we were saying before, is retold for the modern audience, and the production brings together old and new sight and sound, east and west, and includes amazing acrobatics, quite like the ones that Harriet was showing us before, just out there, so I wish you were here to see that, singing and dancing, and merged together with high-technology animations and video projections that brings together the Crystal Palace of the Eastern Sea, the Volcano City, and the Paradise, and its inhabitants, including, you know, the White King, Skeleton King, the Spider Women, and the Old Dragon King, to brilliant and just staggering life. It's just amazing to see. So I will be posting up a video onto the blog tonight, so The Fool and the Opera, joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera is the place to go to check that out. You really have to check it out. It's amazing. Now, from the story of the monkey from the stone egg, on a journey to the west, to a tale of the temple in far west Japan. Yesterday, which, of course, the story also includes five percussive eggs, so there's a bit of a tie there for you. Yesterday, I caught up with composer and artistic director of Aphids, David Young. And Aphids is a Melbourne-based artistic group who present cross art form projects, and you're about to hear the highlights of that interview with David. So you're here on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. David Young is a contemporary composer who is very well known and widely respected the world over. In Melbourne, we can also boast that he's one of ours. To mark the opening of the Melbourne Recital Centre as part of the opening festival, his work, Thousands of Bundled Straw, will be given the distinction of being the second piece to be formed in the MRC's second space, the Salon. Thanks for joining me, David.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, let's talk about this piece.
It took about 10 years to write, so certainly it's one of the largest, longest, most complicated things that I've ever done. It's a song cycle. The duration of the song cycle is about 54 minutes. It's for soprano and 12 instruments. And, yeah, I wrote it over... I mean, it's not the only thing I did in that 10 years, but I did write it over a 10-year period. I didn't realise we were second, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a huge honour to be the second public performance to take place in there. And the beautiful thing about this performance is it's actually the second performance of the full song cycle.
It's based on a myth of the ancient temple of healing eyes. Can you tell us a bit about that story?
When I started writing the song cycle, I was taken to far west Japan, where a friend of mine lives. He's a violinist, amazing violinist, Yasutaka Hemi. And he took me to this temple where he was actually doing like a string masterclass. And so we were staying there, and it was this Ichibata Yakushi, the temple of the healing eyes. On the lake, there's a big lake there, Lake Shinji, and it's kind of up on the mountain. It's all of those romantic Japanese kind of idyllic images. And the myth behind the temple is of Yoichi, this fisherman, who lived apparently about 1,200 years ago. And one day he discovered the statue of the Buddha floating on the water. And so he grabbed it, took it home, and that night it spoke to him in a dream. And it said, if he threw himself off a cliff, his mother's eyes would be opened. His mother was blind. So the next day he got up, wrapped bundles of straw around himself, and he jumped off this cliff. And indeed his mother could see, miraculously, and so he founded a temple, and that's the temple.
And you came to this temple, and while you were there and meditating, is that where this particular song cycle came to life?
Yes. So I actually started writing it in Japan. So the first part that I wrote was actually the fifth movement. So there are seven movements, and in the fifth movement it's just for the soprano and guitar. And the fifth movement is actually made up of seven songs. So in a way it's a kind of mini song cycle within the larger framework. So that first song of the fifth movement I actually completed actually at the temple. So it was very much this moment of inspiration, and it kind of resonated for another 10 years, and indeed sort of still resonating.
Been told that your work is about blending sound and image. Would it be to say that a lot of the visuals of the temple and that sort of thing cued a lot of your sound? Is that how you work or how you write?
Absolutely. It's a little bit like synesthesia, which is, you know, when you kind of get your senses confused. It's actually like a medical condition, but not exactly. When I see something, I kind of can, it's not that I literally hear it, but I can imagine what it would sound like. And so I'm always experiencing the world visually and then kind of translating it into sound in my mind. And so when I see, you know, a Japanese ink drawing, I immediately am thinking about what would that sound like if a violin played it. If I see, you know, a cherry blossom tree silhouetted against the sky, I'm immediately thinking, gosh, you know, I wonder what sort of percussion instrument would render that sound, that, right, you know, that image. And for this song cycle, there are many different visual images which have informed the music. And one of the most clear examples is an architectural plan. There is some very important archaeological sites in that region. And so one of these beautiful archaeological maps where they'd found these strange stone bells, which they don't actually make a sound, like they don't actually know what they were for, but there were hundreds of these stone bells they found under the ground. So I had this map, and that map I actually used as a sort of architectural framework for the song cycle. And so the different rooms and the different spaces and entities that were mapped out on the plan are actually translated into the structure of the movements and the relationships between the durations of the movements and so on. And then at other times quite literally, so that I sort of at times photocopied bits of this map onto graph paper and then transcribed sections into music notation for the piano or whatever.
Right, okay.
So there are those weird connections between the visual image, which are kind of then rendered in time.
Deborah Kayser is the soprano for this particular piece, and she's been working with you for about 10 years now on this particular piece. And I think for both of you, sort of working on this together, has the piece changed for you as you've both developed and matured?
Deborah was the first person to perform my music in public. So we've been working together since 1991, so nearly 20 years, I guess. And one of the amazing things about Deborah is she has an early music training, so she's not trained as a sort of coloratura, you know, dramatic soprano. She's trained within that early music mode, which is much more about the purity of voice without vibrato, which I love. It's an incredibly haunting quality that she has. You know, her instrument is really quite otherworldly. Certainly it's changed. I think Deborah has performed the fifth movement, the songs for voice and guitar, probably 20 or 30 or 40 times at different places all around the world. It's been recorded in Germany, it's been performed in Japan and all over Europe, and it does keep changing every time. In those songs, she's required to drop 5 eggs.
Right.
As a kind of percussive element, but also obviously a dramatic element to the piece. So it's a lot of eggs. And the way that she drops them does vary from time to time. And I think, you know, we will certainly be the first and possibly the only ensemble to drop eggs in a new salon.
Sure. How do you notate a dropping egg?
It's just kind of a little egg shape and then a line with an arrow. Arrow pointing down, of course.
going to make sure they're fresh eggs as well.
Well, strange, during the recording 3 years ago, one of the eggs was off.
Oh.
And oh my God, you could hear it from the control room. Or you'd smell it from the control room anyway.
And I imagine on a day like today where you've been rehearsing where it's, I think, what, 40 degrees out there?
It's actually 45.8.
Did the egg just cook as it hit the ground?
Well, actually, we're rehearsing tonight, so I really hope Deb's got fresh eggs.
You're on Joy 94.9, it is The Fool in the Opera, and you heard Seven Songs for Soprano and Guitar with Deborah Kayser by composer David Young, with one of the rare pieces of music where five eggs are required to play percussion. Did you catch those five eggs dropping? Now, it's not every day that you see or hear something like that, and I am collecting stories about your most bizarre opera experience, so share yours if you like, SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair@joy.org.au, or give us a call, 9699 2949, or if you're listening to the podcast at the moment, why not leave us a post on the blog at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. Meanwhile, let's continue our interview with David. You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera. In terms of talking about the fact that the piece is quite difficult, for me as a listener, I do find it quite difficult as well because it's quite layered. I sort of think of it as like listening to Japanese. I can hear the emotion and I can sort of understand the emotion, but the words themselves, I really don't understand. For a beginner, how would you like a beginner to engage with the music?
Contemporary music has a really bad name. Around the world, actually, it's seen as very difficult, as impenetrable, and very, very often people say to me after they've been to a concert, oh, well, you know, I don't really know anything about that, or I don't really understand contemporary music. And very early on when I was at uni and organising concerts, and people would come after, you know, after the concert and they'd say, oh, well, you know, thanks for inviting me, and, you know, but I don't really know about music, and you know, you're all very clever, and you know, but you know, and it used to really frustrate me because they were there in the concert. They were obviously experiencing something, and I wanted to know what that was, and I wanted to engage with whatever experience it was that they were having. And really, that's why I started my arts company, AFIDS. Mm. It was to try and create performances in which the audience felt that whatever they were experiencing was valid. And we've done that by using unconventional venues, by we always try and have information around the performance, so whether it's a program note or some kind of other explanation, or just trying to create doorways into what is often, you know, difficult work. And a lot of contemporary art is really bewildering if you don't know the story behind it, or if you don't, you know what the artist has done before or whatever. So I guess when you say, you know, what do I want the beginner to get out of it, I'm just keen for them to, if possible, leave behind that baggage of oh, well, I don't know about music, or I don't understand this, or whatever, and just have an experience. And it might be an experience of boredom, or it might be an experience of confusion, or even irritation or frustration. But it certainly over 54 minutes, it will also shift into perhaps moments of repose, moments of excitement, moments of revelation even. Very often in a concert, when I'm most absorbed in the music, whatever kind of music it is, I suddenly find it's almost like meditation. You know, you suddenly think, oh, shit, what happened? You know, had like 5 minutes suddenly disappear and you're off somewhere else. And it's not asleep. You're operating in a different level of consciousness, I think. And what you said about the work being layered, absolutely, it is very layered. It's operating, you know, at a number of different levels. There are a number of different texts that the libretto, or the words that the soprano is singing, is made up of, and some of them are in Japanese and some of them are in Italian, and a few are in English, not very many, and some in French. And they're kind of jumbled up and fragmented, almost like you're sitting in the room next to where a television is and someone's channel flicking.
Right.
It's kind of like you're overhearing this conversation or overhearing this poetry, and you you can't quite grasp it, but you almost can. And so you get these little glimpses. And I think, like, you know, like hopefully any decent work of art, every person will take away a slightly different impression of it, and hopefully indeed have, you know, radically different experiences of it, and perhaps hear different words or, you know, hear different things completely.
Let's talk about the Melbourne Recital Centre for a moment. Can you just describe it for the listeners, the salon?
The salon, it's quite a small room, and I love small, intimate, miniature, subtle, and really this salon is all of those things. So it's not a huge room. I think at the very most it would fit about 120 people. And the thing that strikes you when you first enter are the walls, which are made up of these square, blonde, wooden panels. And they're all slightly tessellated at different angles. And they're all beveled, or they're kind of carved with a Percy Grainger graphic score.
Right.
It's quite a high ceiling, so the space is actually very resonant. It's got a, you know, almost an echo to it, but that can be controlled by the acoustic panelling, and it's got all the, you know, the latest mod cons and so on. And then the floor is made up of this pressed bamboo, which again, you know, is quite light. So it's a very light, wooden, simple, beautiful space.
And in terms of your piece, now I understand that you've had 25 three-hour rehearsals in there. Has the piece changed to suit the space?
We haven't had all our rehearsals yet, so we're still in the process of rehearsing, and indeed not all of them are in there, unfortunately. But the main difference is that this piece has been performed in larger venues, basically. And what happens with a larger venue is that the musician just very naturally and instinctively projects to the back row. And in a space not only of this size, but also where the acoustic is so pure, the room is absolutely silent. It's literally balanced on springs so that you don't get any vibration from the trams going past. It's totally isolated. I mean, if you're in there and all the lights are switched off and everything, nothing else is in there, you can actually hear your own heart beating.
That's amazing.
It's an anechoic chamber. I mean, it's quite incredible. And this means that the musicians can play at a dynamic level that would otherwise be absolutely impossible. So they can play very, very softly. And in a way, it creates this incredible intimacy. It's almost like the musicians are playing for themselves and you just happen to be there.
Yeah.
So that is radically changing the work. It means that there's much more delicacy and nuance. So it's, as someone who's interested in that kind of thing, that subtlety, it's been incredibly exciting.
Excellent. Well, David Young, thank you so much. Best luck with the performance this coming Thursday. Thursday, February 12, will be the Thousands of Bundled Straw performance at the Salon in the Melbourne Recital Centre. So thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Dan.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Thanks very much to David Young, who came in to talk with us yesterday about his piece, Thousands of Bundled Straw. You can catch an exclusive extended version of that interview with David Young from the Joy, from the blog. Check out joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. And my lovely producer and tonight paneler, Jed, will be posting that up in the next couple of days. Now, Thousands of Bundled Straw has sold out, but if you go to the box on the night and beg, who knows, they might be able to do something for you. That's what I'll be doing anyway. There's another show that I'll be dying to see this week as well, which is going to be The Queen of the Night with American soprano Cindy Sidon, who will be performing an all Mozart program of classical delights with the Australian Brandenburg Orchestra, featuring, of course, the famous Queen of the Night aria from The Magic Flute. Now, despite what you might think, it has nothing to do with gay men on a night out. Not even Adam Stobbs. So the song is in fact about the Queen of the Night, who puts a knife in the hand of her daughter Pimina and demands that she assassinate Saestro, the Queen's rival. Now, nothing scares me more than a pissed off German mother belting out a few high Fs with a knife in her hand. Hey look, the knife I made it back in the show. Now, anyway, I will play the Cindy Sidon version of this wonderful aria, but before that I'm going to assault your ears with something that is much, much worse. Some have thought that I was going to play the Florence Foster Jenkins version of the aria, which is considered to who she is considered by most people around the world to be the world's greatest, worst opera singer of all time. But no, I'm going to spare you that tragedy tonight. Instead, we're going to play a Dolly Deluxe version. And with a name like that, you'd think that it was a drag queen or something, but it's something much, much worse. It's a Norwegian pop duo who became famous in the 80s doing a series of rock versus opera tunes. So I take it back. In fact, actually, nothing scares me more than a couple of Norwegians in shoulder-padded power suits with big hair singing opera. Now, this is the Queen of the Night aria, matched up with Satisfaction. You're on the Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9.
The Fool and the Opera on Joy
94.9. You're on The Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was the Queen of the Night aria, De Hollerach, from The Magic Flute, as sung by Cindy Seiden. Now, you'll be able to see her perform this week live when she comes out to Melbourne, to the Melbourne Recital Centre, this Wednesday, February 11, to play in the Elizabeth Murdoch Hall. Now, if you've not had the chance to see the space yet, I highly recommend it. It's a spectacular location. Last Monday, the opening for press and special guests was held, and let me tell you, this place is like a feather in the cap of all Victorians. The MRC is a glory of architectural and acoustic perfection. The Hamer Quartet and guest oboist, I think that's what you call them, oboist? Yeah. Dean Newcomb performed Mozart's clarinet quintet for Elizabeth Murdoch, who turns 11. She turns 100, rather, a bit older than 11, and the performance was just breathtaking. I recently watched a talk held by Evelyn Glennie, a world-famous deaf percussionist, and she advocates the practice of listening to music through, you know, other parts of your body, like through your throat or through the tips of your fingers, and just listening to, with more than just your ears, and you can hear, experience music physically with all your senses. And the Elizabeth Murdoch Hall really is perfect for this kind of a musical experience. The music sound really just envelopes you, and the most magical experience was when the oboe player started playing. Without even actively trying to listen to the sound the way that Glennie suggests, I found that the sound of the oboe sort of just floated towards me and then sat sort of above my head, this beautiful, clear and really bewitching sound. And usually the sound of the oboe really frustrates me. I find it really irritating because it floats between my ears. It just kind of goes meow, meow, meow. And the sound in the Elizabeth Murdoch Hall was just sheer bliss. So there are great things ahead for Melbourne with the addition of this purpose-built recital centre. And in the next year alone, there are going to be more than 250 performances in the two spaces, the Elizabeth Murdoch Hall and the Salon. So, well, actually, tonight, for example, you can catch the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra playing some Wagner and Schoenberg, and there are plenty of other works, operatic and non-operatic, coming as well. So with sport for choice in Melbourne, and with some amazing talent, and with some wonderful music being put out there each week, but with this new venue, with two spaces allocated for performance, this is going to just crystallise Melbourne as the cultural hub of Australia with world-class standards. So we're very lucky to have the MRC, so with any chance that you get, do check it out. Now, I'm going to go back to Mozart and the Magic Flute for a moment. And as you know, I like to finish the show with a bit of a jazzy piece. So to prepare you for the next show, which is Bent Notes, and today Stephen Hahn, our station manager, is going to be driving the ship, so that'll be interesting. Now, this week we've got Nouvelle Cuisine featuring Christian Kronoff performing Papagenesis, a jazz reworking of the Papageno duet. So have a listen and enjoy. You're on Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was Papagenesis from the album Mozart Revisited by Nouvelle Cuisine, featuring Christian Kronoff, with enough false finishes in the piece to give our new training panel operator a bit of a heart attack. So it was quite an interesting piece, wasn't it? It's really interesting to hear those sort of familiar tunes, but then sort of at the very end, they just sort of twist it slightly. Now, thanks very much for listening today. Now, we did have a message in from Adam Stobbs before saying that, come on, Smartest, well, tell me what the song really is about. Well, thanks to the wonder of Wikipedia, we do have a few lyrics here. Disowned be forever, forsaken be forever, destroyed be forever. And I think that's what Adam wants to do to me now after I said that little thing. But I do love you, Adam. Thanks so much for teaching me to be a great radio presenter. So I can talk about you on air. Now, next week is going to be a big one. Audio producer Jed and I are going to be hanging out in the new Melbourne Recital Centre, and we'll be recording a few things. And next week we'll bring you a private oral tour of the new centre. So listen again next week. As Mozart would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.